With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you're listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Well, welcome to the Yuletide season, and how about a little merry metal to start tonight off? This is Savage Science Radio, so we try to do a little savage and a little science all at the same time. Have you ever heard of a devil's garden? Well, researchers have found an earthly cause for a phenomenon that Peruvian locals call devil's gardens in the Amazonian rainforest. And ecologists, botanists, you know, they have their own little versions of devil's gardens. But in this particular instance, these gardens consist of just one type of tree, Daroya hirsuta. And this is such an eerie and unusual sight in the otherwise diverse Amazon that the locals presumed there has to be a supernatural cause. But the U.S. researchers say it's not supernatural, it's natural, and it's ants, not the devil, that make this tree bloom. Now, these ants, Mermelochista schumanni is their scientific name, live inside the tree's hollow stems, safe from the predators and the environment. They kill all the plants other than their host plant by injecting formic acid into the leaves. In this way, they help their host plant and their own colony to spread. Such gardens can hold more than 300 trees and millions of ants and can be hundreds of years old. It's amazing that the ants exert so much control over their environment, says Deborah Gordon of Stanford University in California. They create a single species stand of plants in one of the most diverse places on the planet. Now, how does this happen? Well, with killer injections. Some previous studies have suggested that ants or the trees themselves were killing the surrounding plants, but no one could really explain how. Now, Megan Fredrickson of Stanford University and her colleagues, including Gordon, report in Nature that the ants do it through injecting a natural poison. The researchers planted saplings of a common Amazonian cedar tree, C. odorata, in an ant-infested forest. When they kept the ants away, the cedar trees thrived. But when the ants had access to the young trees, the cedars all shed leaves after about 5 days or so. And it seems that the ants bite a hole in the leaves and deliver a droplet of formic acid from their abdomens. The plant's vascular system then spreads this acid throughout the entire plant, and within hours of the attack, brownish areas appear on the veins of its leaves. In hindsight, it's obvious, says Susan Renner of the University of Munich in Germany. She studied devil's gardens in Ecuador 7 years ago and was unable to explain how the ants killed the plants. So, I guess we've gone a little further with that research. So happy together? Well, formic acid is very common among ants. About one quarter of the 15,000 ant species produce it, says Jacqueline Gino, an ant researcher at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. Now, many ants use it to defend themselves against animal or insect attack, but this is the first time that ants have been seen using it as an herbicide, he adds. Now, these Devil's Garden relationships join a growing list of partnerships between plants and ants. Some plants have evolved to grow food for resident ants, which protect their host in return. Other ants physically cut away at neighboring vegetation to help their host plants spread. But how can an ant tell whether a plant is the same species as its host or different? Well, that is the next mystery Fredrickson wants to solve. She also wants to see whether the ants can kill mature trees as well as saplings, and find out how widespread devil's gardens are in the Amazon. And if you want to read more about that, you can go to their report, which is in Nature, number 437, and it's by Fredrickson, Green, and Gordon. Well, now you might be asking yourself, what in the world does a devil's garden have anything to do with the Yuletide season? Well, I'm going to tell you. Our feature presentation tonight is none other than Back for Christmas, which was adapted from the short story of the same name by one of my favorite authors, John Collier. Both Escape and Suspense presented this tale, but without the gruesome elements of the original work. Now, of course, you can get that and enjoy it in its entirety if you read the story. But the radio dramatizations also add some extra scenes to fill the half-hour format. Now, the story begins back in England, inside the house of a professor of botany named Herbert Carpenter. He and his wife, Hermione, are soon to leave for an extended trip to America, where he was going to be lecturing. Hermione is a shrew who keeps her husband under her constant control. Now, she has planned every detail of their trip with precision, and to her annoyance, Herbert is not conforming with her plan. Instead, he's wasting time on a botanical project in their cellar. He is also lingering too long at the bookshop to chat with the bookseller, Miss Markham. Of course, what his little project is a devil's garden, which we just talked about. Now, Hermione has promised all of their friends that they will be back for Christmas, but if Herbert has his way, she just might not. Now, Back for Christmas was adapted for radio by Robert Talman. Paul Frees played Herbert, and Hermione was played by Eleanor Audley. As a matter of trivia, both Frees and Audley provided voices for Disneyland's Haunted Mansion, which you may or may not know. Frees was the voice of the ghost host, and Audley was the voice of Madame Leota. Eleanor Audley also provided the voices for two of Disney's most famous villainesses, the wicked stepmother Lady Tremaine in Cinderella and the evil fairy Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty. Now, that episode aired on December 24th, 1947, which would be Christmas Eve. Happy Merry Evil Christmas. Now, the radio play performed on Escape had originally aired on Suspense on December 23, 1943. Peter Lorre played the role of the professor, and his rendition of the henpecked husband gone mad is classic. The name of the actress who played Hermione is not given, but it was probably Jeanette Nolan, because Suspense presented this story for the second time on December 23, 1948. Herbert Marshall starred as the professor in that version. And again, the name of the actress playing Hermione is not given, but it was probably Jeanette Nolan. Betty Lou Gearson, who played the bookseller in this episode, or that episode, provided the voice for another famous Disney villainess. She was the original Cruella de Vil in 101 Dalmatians. Now, there was even another one that was done in 1956, but something that you might be more familiar with is the adaptation by Francis M. Cockrell for Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which was aired on March 4th, 1956, starred John Williams and Isabel Elsom. So if you want to see the visual presentation of it, that's a fantastic version. And without much further ado, let's check in on the professor and his loving, doting wife and see how they're getting on this Yuletide season.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Salute, your health, señor.
Roma toasts the world. The wine for your table is Roma, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is the man in black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight in Hollywood, Roma brings you as star Mr. Peter Lorre. The suspense play which stars Mr. Lorre, and which is produced and directed by William Spear, is called Back for Christmas. In this series, Roma brings you tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so, with Back for Christmas and with the performance of Peter Lorre, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride one with you.
Yes, Maria?
What on earth are you doing down here in the cellar?
Oh, yeah, just doing a little digging.
And why, may I ask, have you chosen this day of all days to dig up the cellar floor?
Oh, I thought because the weather has been so damp, this would be a good time to plant that little devil's garden I told you about.
Devil's garden? Whatever nonsense is that?
Don't you remember that was my little joke about it? You see, I've managed to get hold of the spores of several unclassified wild orchids. In their wild state, they bloom under damp masses of leaf mold. The South American Indians call them devil flowers because they appear to bloom under the ground.
Well, I'm sure the South American Indians will be very interested if you succeed in growing these ridiculous flowers under the cellar floor. Whom else it will interest, I can't imagine. Oh, what's that terrible smell?
Oh, that's the leaf mold, chemically identical with the earth blanket they grow under in their wild state. And I want to get these started before we close the house.
Do you realize that we're sailing for America a week from today, and you've made no arrangements whatever? Unless you call digging a hole in the cellar making arrangements. I certainly don't. Devil's garden, indeed. Sometimes I think you're going soft in the head, Hubert.
Oh, I suppose it is inconsiderate of me, you see. And I've been wanting to try this experiment for a long time, but with all those lectures and seminars at the university, there never seemed to be enough time.
Well, there certainly isn't any time for it now. I suppose you've forgotten I made an appointment for you at the barber's this afternoon.
Oh, must I shave my beard off, Hermione?
I thought we'd been through all that. Of course you must. They don't wear beards in America. Bad enough you're speaking with that accent. They'll probably think we're Germans as it is.
Oh, I should think it would be quite easy just to explain it. I'm Swiss.
Now, Hubert, don't be argumentative. Oh. Go and get your jacket on and do as I tell you.
Yes, Hermione.
And don't forget to take your umbrella. It looks like rain.
Yes, Hermione.
And don't look so put upon, Hubert. Someone has to plan things in this house. Never even get to the university in time for your lectures, much less make arrangements for a trip to America.
I know, but what about my specimens?
There'll be plenty of time to plant your precious devil's garden when we get home from America. We're not going to be gone forever, you know. We'll be back here for Christmas.
Yes, of course. Back for Christmas. I'd forgotten.
We'll try to remember it. And if you can't do that, just do as I tell you. I've been making the plans in this house for 20 years. And if there's any digging to be done, I'll manage that as well. You understand, Hubert?
Yes, Hermione.
Good. Now, you have just 20 minutes to clean up this mess down here and keep your appointment at the barber's. And when you're finished there, I want you to come straight home.
All right. I wanted to stop at Miss Markham's and pick up some books I ordered.
Well, all right. But don't loiter there the whole afternoon mulling over those old books the way you usually do. Now, hurry and clear up this rubbish. Get rid of that smelly stuff. And no more digging, mind you.
No more digging. I'll show her. I'll have my devil's garden, and if I... No more digging, eh? No more digging. Oh, 15 men on a deathman's chest. Yoo-hoo! Yoo-hoo! And a bottle. Good evening, Miss Markham.
Why, it is Professor Schumacher, isn't it?
Do you like me better this way?
You look ever so much younger without the beard. 20 years at least.
20 years?
Oh, you'll be glad to know those books you ordered have finally arrived.
Oh, yes, the books.
Let me see. The Phytotomy of Phalloid Gametophytes,
mm-hmm.
And Coniferous Shrubs of North America. Those are the
very
ones you ordered,
good.
Aren't they?
Yes, thank you. You're very kind, Miss Markham.
Why kind, Professor Schumacher?
Well, not many young ladies in bookshops would go out of their way to look up rare books for an old professor of botany.
Why, you're not old, Professor Schumacher. Really, you look...
What do I look like?
And besides, I adore botany. It's my particular hobby.
Oh, really? You've never told me that before, Miss Markham.
Well, I was afraid to. You looked so imposing with the beard and all.
Miss Markham, forgive me if this sounds foolish, but since talking with you today, I feel that shaving off my beard is the most important thing I've done for 20 years.
Oh, it is. I'm sure it is.
For 20 years.
I'm so sorry that I've been so distant with you all this time. Oh, there were times when I almost spoke up.
Well,
times when you came in here tired after a day with your students at the university. You seemed so alone. The way I'm alone in the world.
Alone?
I'd like to have asked you to stay a while and talk with me, but some way or other I always wound up giving you your change and letting you go on your way.
Say, you're alone in the world?
Since my father died.
Oh, Miss Markham, did you never think of marrying?
My father was a very remarkable man. I never found anyone who seemed to measure up to what he led me to expect of men.
Miss Markham...
Oh, it's been so long since anyone called me by my first name. Uh-huh. I'd like you to, if you want to.
Oh.
It's Marion.
Marion. Oh, how nice.
And yours?
Well, Hubertus. but in English, Hubert sounds better, huh?
How long have you been alone, Hubert?
Alone?
I knew you were a widower, of course. The first time I saw you.
A widower?
I can always tell this. There's a certain sadness in a man's eyes. A sweet sadness, I think, when he's been married and then lost...
A widower. I never thought of it in quite that way.
Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have been talking like this, I suppose, but I've often wondered what she must have been like. Your wife, I mean.
Hermione? Not an easy woman to forget. Very strong. Always managing things. The house, my wardrobe, my friends. Even when we dined at a restaurant, she even then ordered my food. She was always managing things. Her whole life. Managed herself to death.
Poor woman. She must have loved you very much. But you needn't have put herself out so. It's plain to see you don't need things managed for you.
No.
You need companionship, I think. Someone sympathetic with your work. But the last thing on earth you need is a manager.
How well you put it. The last thing on earth.
Operator. Operator, are you there? I'm still waiting on that call to Salisbury. Well, put them on quickly. Hello. Is this Paul Holt and son? It's Mrs. Hubert Schumacher. Did you receive my letter? Good. Now remember, we'll be back for Christmas and I want the job done without fail. What's that? No. No, I'm sure he doesn't suspect anything. Send it to me in New York as I instructed you, addressed in my name, of course. Yes. I've already put them in the mail. You'll get them tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, here you are, Hubert. Where have you been?
Oh, backstairs. I dismissed the servants.
Dismissed the servants?
Mm-hmm.
But I've asked some friends of mine into a farewell luncheon. Go and tell them it's a mistake.
Well, I'm afraid it's too late now. They've packed and gone.
You have messed things up properly. How many times have I told you to leave things to me? I make the plans around here.
Yes, Hermione.
You have to do better than this when I plan the trip home, or we'll never in the world be back for Christmas.
Back for Christmas. Back for Christmas. Must you keep saying that?
Why not? We are coming back for Christmas, aren't we?
Well, supposing I were offered a professorship in one of those wealthy American universities.
Nonsense. Americans care nothing for botany.
Well, Luther Burbank was an American, wasn't
he? That's different. What have you ever done except muck around in the dirt with a lot of roots and tubers?
Well, they asked me to lecture, didn't they?
All right, all right. Now, there's no use getting yourself in a state about this, Hubert. No doubt this extra money will come in very handy when we arrive back...
Back for Christmas.
Precisely. No good to make a joke of it. Heaven knows where you'd be today if I hadn't got a sense of time.
Yes, Hermione.
And as you've been so foolish as to dismiss the servants, you may empty the ashtrays and straighten up this room while we're waiting for the guests to arrive. Mm-hmm. I'm going in to have my bath. Call me when they get here.
Marion? It's Hubert. No, darling, no, nothing is wrong. Oh, my plans are the same, unless you have changed. No? Oh, we'll meet in New York then and be married there. Oh, I'll explain to you why later. You just have to trust me. Yes. Yes, my darling.
Hubert?
I'm so sorry, I can't talk any longer. Yes, I'll meet you in New York, without fail. Auf Wiedersehen, mein Liebchen.
Talking on the phone just now?
Yes, Hermione.
Whoever was it?
Oh, Freddie Sinclair.
But didn't I hear you say something about meeting somebody in New York?
Why, yes. Freddie said he might possibly get over there before we even leave. And I said, of course, we'd meet him there if he decided to go.
That seems very peculiar. But then all of your friends are peculiar.
Yes, Hermione.
And just look at your jacket. Have you been digging in that cellar again?
Yes, Hermione.
Well, there's no need for it. You can't possibly get that Devil's Garden thing finished before we sail for America. Go and change your clothes before the guests arrive. Oh, never mind. I see somebody coming up the walk now. Go and let them in.
Yes.
Hubert.
Yes?
Look out the window. There's Professor and Mrs. Goodenough, but who's that with them?
Well, who...
Precisely. Freddie Sinclair. Peculiar, you should have been talking to him on the phone not 3 minutes ago, and now here he is.
Yes, isn't it? Oh, but then, as you say, Hermione, all of my friends are peculiar.
Not half so peculiar as you. Digging in the cellar the very day we leave for America. Just look at yourself. And now that I think of it...
Yes?
Oh, never mind. Go and let them in.
Oh, you were going to ask me something, Hermione, about the hole I'm digging in a cellar.
Good heavens, stop rolling your eyes about that way. One would think you were digging a grave down there instead of a storage bin.
Yes, Hermione.
What's that?
I said yes, Hermione.
Father, open the door and please stop saying yes, Hermione.
I think, my dear, I have said it for the last time.
A professor of botany, his loving wife, and an oblong pit in the cellar. Just the right size for his botanical specimens, his devil's garden. With these ingredients for a story of a perfect crime, Back for Christmas by John Collier and starring Peter Lorre, the Roma Wine Company closes the curtain for a moment on another breathless study in suspense.
In this brief intermission in the play, it's pleasant to think about the holidays. Not everyone celebrates the holidays against a background of snow and pine trees. Somewhere south of the Gulf and the Caribbean, in a gracious home surrounded by palm trees and the warm sun, you might find holiday dinners ending this way.
One moment, please. Our North American guest wishes to propose a toast.
Yes, mis amigos. I drink a toast in gratitude to you for your gracious hospitality and the enjoyment you've given me, an American so far from home.
It is only a fair exchange, my friend. This wine in which you drink your toast, it brings enjoyment to us from your country, from America. It is Roma wine, made in your own California.
Yes, and when you choose the wine for your holiday table, remember this. Only a few wines are so fine that many countries of the world import them. And among these greatly enjoyable wines are the wines of Roma. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Yet here in America, we are truly fortunate. For we may buy Roma wines at a very low cost, since we don't have to pay import duty or costly shipping charges. So serve Roma wine with pride on any and all holiday occasions. Serve Roma, too, for everyday dinners you can afford to. Ask your dealer tomorrow for your favorite Roma wine, America's largest selling wine. But before you buy wine, buy war bonds.
And now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our sound stage Mr. Peter Lorre in Act Two of Back for Christmas, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Hermione was so positive we would be back for Christmas. That last afternoon, pouring tea out for a few friends who had come in to see her last-minute farewells, she kept reiterating it.
Now, mind you, Hermione, don't let those Americans lure your husband with one of their fat university jobs. We absolutely must have you with us for Christmas.
He shall be back, I promise you.
Well, it's not absolutely certain, of course.
Hubert, now, what do you mean it's not certain? Of course it's certain.
After all, Hubert, old boy, you've contracted to lecture for only 3 months.
Oh, that's quite right, but then, of course, anything may happen.
Hubert adores being unpredictable. Now, what other man would decide the day, the very day, mind you, before leaving for America, to dig a great hole in the floor of the cellar?
In the cellar?
Yes. He's going to put some unclassified wild orchids down there. A devil's garden, if you please. It sounds so mysterious. That's Hubert, though. It's really quite simple, however, once you find out what he's up to. Now, take that telephone call he put through to you a few minutes ago, Freddy.
Me?
Of course. Now, Hubert wanted to surprise me about your plan to meet us in New York next month. Wasn't that why he called? To ask you not to mention it?
My dear Hermione, Hubert couldn't possibly have telephoned me within the past hour. I've been walking in the park since 3.
He didn't telephone you?
Well, how could he? This is for my going to America.
No, come, Freddy, come. You may as well confess. Hermione has just found me out again.
But Hubert, old chap, I really do.
You see what a poor liar Hubert makes. He's red as a beetroot.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself, Professor? Stringing poor Hermione along like that. And as for you, Freddy, I'm furious you said nothing to us about going to America.
But look here, old girl. I've been trying to tell everyone here that I'm...
Oh, stop the nonsense. The game's gone on long enough. Besides, we must start getting ready. Now, it was marvelous of all of you to come in to say goodbye. And don't worry about Hubert's little jokes. I will bring him back for Christmas. You may rely on it.
They all believed her. For years, she had been promising me for dinner parties, garden parties, committees, and the promises had always been kept. This time, they would not be. I had seen to that. The servants were gone for good. The farewells all said. I had timed to the minute how long it would take to fill in a hole in a cellar. My devil's garden. Upstairs in her bedroom, I undressed and put on my old bathrobe, and then I opened the door into Hermione's room. Hermione, have you a moment to spare?
Of course, dear. I'm just finished.
Oh, then, will you come in here for a moment, please? There's something rather extraordinary here.
Oh, good heavens, Hubert. What are you lounging about in that filthy old bathrobe for? I told you to put it into the furnace.
Oh, I'll do it. I'll do it today. Yes, really, I will. I promise.
Well, high time. Now, what is it you want to show me?
Oh, here, in the bathroom. Just look, who in the world do you suppose dropped a gold chain down the bathtub drain?
Nobody has, of course. Nobody wears such a thing.
Then what is it doing in here?
I don't see anything.
Well, look. I'll hold this flashlight here for you. If you lean right over, you can see it shining. It's deep down.
Oh, such a lot of nonsense. Just as well. Well, I don't see it, Hubert.
Well, go on looking, Hermione, in just a moment.
Hubert, I absolutely refuse. Hubert, what are you doing? Take your hands off my neck.
I will, Hermione. Just as soon as I've finished the arrangements for my trip to America.
What are you talking about?
You thought you were the only one who could plan things, didn't you? Didn't you, Hermione, huh? Oh. Well, I've been making some plans of my own this past week. In exactly 2 minutes and 16 seconds, you'll be dead.
What?
You see, I planned it very accurately.
You'll never get away with it.
Oh, I thought you would say that, Hermione, but I will get away with it. You won't mind the smell of the leaf mold down in the cellar when I take you down there today? Yes. That is where you are going, Hermione. Right into my devil's garden that annoyed you so much.
My friends all expect me back for Christmas.
They do.
If they don't hear from me, they'll start asking questions.
No, they won't. Because you'll write them letters, Hermione, on a typewriter, as you always do. They'll be signed H. In that neat, correcting way, you always sign your notes to your friends.
Here, let me up now.
No!
It won't work, Hubert. You were never any good at planning.
Oh, but I have changed. I have learned from watching you all these years.
The lecture people in America, they'll expect you to be traveling with your wife.
I will be traveling with my wife, but not my present wife, Hermione.
Hubert, it won't work, I tell you. That pit you dug in the cellar?
Oh, it will work. It'll serve its purpose well.
Hubert!
No, I'm sorry, dear. This thing has to be done exactly as planned. You have just 5 seconds to say your prayers.
Hubert! You must listen. The cellar, it's... Don't do it, Hubert!
Let him manage! Stuart?
Yes, sir?
My wife, she's in this post. She'll be taking her meals in our stateroom.
For the whole voyage, sir?
Yes, for the whole voyage.
I trust your wife is feeling better this morning, Professor Schumacher.
A little. Not yet well enough to leave her cabin.
Oh, what a shame.
Professor Schumacher?
Yes?
Here's a copy of the radiogram you sent for your wife last evening.
Oh. Thank you. I'll just check it over. But look here.
Why? What's the matter? Did the typist make a mistake?
No. It's nothing important. She can correct it later. For a moment, I had a feeling that Hermione had been leaning over my shoulder again, correcting what I had written as she always did. I had written a radiogram to Professor Goodenough and his wife. Haven't been out of my cabin the whole beastly trip. Hubert well. Now, doubt, we'll be back for Christmas. But the operator had left out the W and it read, no doubt we'll be back for Christmas. Exactly what Hermione would have written. Well, the rest of the trip was uneventful. Marion and I met in New York just as we had planned. Just as we had planned. Professor and Mrs. Schumacher, we have reservations, I believe.
Oh, yes, we've been expecting you, sir. Boy, take Professor and Mrs. Schumacher's luggage up to their suite. Now, Mrs. Schumacher, you're quite a surprise.
Oh?
Your letter reserving the rooms was so thorough. I was expecting an older, more forbidding sort of person, frankly, ma'am.
No. As a matter of fact, we're just married, but I... My letter reserving the room.
Oh, I wrote the letter, my dear, and I signed it Mrs. Hubert Schumacher. Just a joke.
What a cunning old fox you are, Hubert.
Now that I think of it,
I almost forgot. There's a letter for you, Mrs. Schumacher.
That's peculiar. I wonder who on earth...
Oh, well, we'll shall find out in good time. Come along, darling. Oh, we are keeping the boy waiting. Come. Nothing like a cold, brisk shower to put a man to rights.
Hubert, this letter.
Oh, yes, the letter. Dry my hair, will you, darling? Please.
It seems to be a bill of some sort from a building contractor in Salisbury.
Oh, really?
Oh, bother. Dry your own hair.
Thank you, darling. Let's see this bill or whatever it is.
It's very puzzling. Hubert, you were a widower, weren't you? I mean, Hermione isn't still alive.
Good heavens, no. Well, let me read that. Mm-hmm. Dear madame, this is to acknowledge your order to... together with the keys to your house in Launceston Place. Our man had no difficulty in finding the place where your husband had begun the excavation in a cellar, but apparently he changed his mind at the last moment and filled it in again.
What is it, Hubert?
Our man will begin digging tomorrow, and the job will be completed in ample time for your surprise Christmas present to your husband. We are happy to be conspirators with you in this thoughtful gesture and hope that Professor Schumacher will be pleased at the results of our work on his devil's garden. Very truly yours, Paul Holt Sons Contractors.
What does it mean, Hubert? It
means that Hermione was right. I will be back for Christmas. I will be back for Christmas. I will back for Christmas. Back for Christmas. Yes, for money.
And so closes Back for Christmas, starring Mr. Peter Lorre. Tonight's tale of suspense.
In just a moment, we shall hear again from Mr. Lorre. But first, just a word that seems appropriate. One of the world's oldest customs is the Christmas toast. And traditionally, down through centuries of war and peace, the Christmas toast has been drunk in wine. This year, when the glasses are filled and raised once again, we know that in every home the toast will be to a speedy victory and a speedy return of those we love. And before we set the wine glasses down, let us all resolve to do everything within our power to help make that toast come true. Let us resolve to help supply the weapons of war by buying even more and more war bonds. Let us resolve to face our own inconveniences without complaining. And above all, let us resolve that when this war is at last over, each of us will exert all our effort to see that future Christmases truly express peace on earth, goodwill to men. This thought, together with our very best wishes of the season, is the Roma Wine Company's Christmas message for you, its friends, here in America and throughout the world.
This is Peter Lorre. Thank you for listening to our suspense play this evening, and I know you're looking forward to next week's show, as I am. It is called Finishing School, and its subtitle might be the famous quotation, "The female of the species is more deadly than a male."
Don't forget, then, next Thursday, same time, for Margot, Elsa Lanchester, Janet Beecher, and a distinguished all-feminine cast in Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wine, R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, it looks like he's going to be back for Christmas after all. Now, looking into the origin of this idea that the natives had in the Peruvian Brazilian area that spawned the name Devil's Garden is a creature called the Chuquichaqui, and in Spanish it's El Chuquichaqui. Sorry, but that's what they said. It's also known as Chapachico, and it's a legendary devil of the Peruvian and Brazilian Amazonian jungle. Some say he appears disguised as prey to hunters and tricks them deep into the jungle where even experienced trackers can't find a way back. Others say that the Chuquichaqui takes the physical form of a family member or a loved one long not seen and persuades his victim to follow him into unknown places in the jungle where they are led into traps or at the edge of cliffs with no way out. Others say that he appears in the shape of a very short man dressed in rags, waving his closed fist in the air looking for a fight. Now, in this case, natives believe a man must accept this challenge from the Chuquichaqui and beat him until he uncovers the richness he has hidden in the jungle. He who declines this challenge is cursed with the inability to hunt and foul luck. Family and friends turn into enemies, wife leaves him for another man, etc., which isn't all that different than what actually went on with the professor in our story, but I digress. In some recent incarnations, apparently the Chuquichaqui is described as a bipedal creature, similar in appearance to an imp or some reports of El Chupacabra. In these cases, the creature is said to be aggressive and extremely lethal and has, according to some tribes, killed a number of humans. You know, the goat sucker. Apparently he doesn't just suck on goats. Anyway, going on, the most common Chuquichaqui tales are accounts of him impersonating someone familiar to the victim. Folks claim that his uncanny ability to replicate others makes him impossible to tell apart, but for a limping on his left leg, which he cannot change from its original state. You know, there's always a catch right there. You know, villains, superheroes, they always have a chink. That's his. It's that of a goat's leg. Oh, no! El Chupacabra strikes again. The Chuquichaqui is said to have an ability to turn into any animal also of the rainforest, and the Chuquichaqui is a kind of a forest spirit who guards the lands and the animals and punishes a man if he breaks a taboo or otherwise acts unwisely in the forest. Another cautionary tale there. According to a local legend, Chuguchaki is a member of an older species, a species that lived there long before humans. And, of course, you know, the Bigfoot people get all interested and excited about that idea. They inhabit forest spots far from human inhabitants, where they supposedly have their own gardens and fields to tend. Sort of like Santa Claus, but in the rainforest, you know, far away with his treasure. That might be a far stretch. Just trying to tie it into the Yuletide feeling, okay? Now, if a human being dwells too close to those gardens, they might attack and put a spell on an unlucky human. Okay, now, Santa Claus doesn't do that. He's supposed to be a nice guy. Sometimes a Chuguchaki might also steal a human child and raise it as his own, or lure humans into its trap for mating purposes. Ooh. Yuletide romance. A human thus stolen by the Chuguchaki becomes one of them. So there you go. There's a little bit of background on the spirit that they felt was causing that phenomenon with the trees that we talked about earlier. Now, actually, part of tonight was the author John Collier that I really, really like. His short stories, many of them appeared in the New Yorker from the 1930s to the 1950s, and most of them are collected in the John Collier Reader. Earlier collections include a 1951 volume, The Famous Fancies and Good Nights, which won the International Fantasy Award and remains in print, so you can get a copy of it. John Collier's writing has been praised by authors such as Anthony Burgess, Ray Bradbury, Raoul Dahl, Neil Gaiman, Michael Chabon, Wyndham Lewis, and Paul Thoreau, for a few. Unfortunately, he appears to have given few interviews in his life, but the few that he did include conversations with biographer Betty Richardson, Tom Milne, and Max Wilk, if you want to look those up. Now, something I find kind of fun about the man, and, you know, not just one of his stories got picked up by Alfred Hitchcock. He did a few of his plays and adapted them for his show. Also, there was Orson Welles was in one of the screenplays that he did. George England. There are so many. Leslie Nielsen, Cedric Hardwick, John Williams, just a lot of people who starred in stories that this man's mind thought up. And when he had just finished Sylvia Scarlett, that movie, he was working on The Elephant Boy, and he specifically wanted to make a star out of the young child actor Sabu, which is synchronicity, because my grandfather served with Sabu back during World War II, believe it or not. So there's a little bit of personal trivia about that. And the one fun thing I was referring to was that he obviously didn't take himself too seriously, which is something that is sort of a shot in the foot for an awful lot of writers. He actually sort of poked fun at himself while he had written some short stories during the period in which he was trying to find success as a poet, which he started out as. His career didn't take shape until the publication of the story His Monkey Wife in 1930. It enjoyed a certain small popularity. It's a pretty good one, I think. And critical approval that helped to sell his short stories after that. Now, as a private joke, Collier wrote a decidedly cool 4-page review of His Monkey Wife, describing it as an attempt to combine the qualities of the thriller with those of what might be called the decorative novel. Those are his words. And concluding with the following appraisal of the talents of its author, quote, "From the classical standpoint, his consciousness is too crammed for harmony, too neurasthenic for proportion, and his humor is too hysterical, too greedy, and too crude," unquote. Author Peter Straub has in the same with fake negative reviews in admiration of Collier, and I think that's pretty cool. He humbled himself in a very non-humble way. Now, a little bit of trivia about the film that I mentioned, Sylvia Scarlett. It starred Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, Brian Ahern, and Edmund Gwenn. And it was the comic story of a widower, his daughter Sylvia, who disguises herself as a boy and a con man. Now, Collier's collaborators on the script were Gladys Unger and Mortimer Offner, which are two big ones. And although it was considered sort of bizarre at the time, decades later, it enjoys a huge cult following. So if you have a chance to see that film, catch it. It's totally worth your time. Of course, he was prolific in film and television, contributed notably to screenplays of The African Queen, The Warlord, I Am a Camera, which was adapted from the Berlin stories and remade later as Cabaret, Her Cardboard Lover, Deception, and Rosanna McCoy. Now, of course, he won a poetry award granted by the Paris Literary Magazine this quarter for his poetry collection, Gemini. And, of course, as we mentioned before, International Fantasy Award was given to him for fiction in 1952 for Fancies and Good Nights that he wrote the year before. And the Edgar Award for Best Short Story in 1952 for Fancies and Good Nights also. Now, John Collier died relatively recently of a stroke on April 6, 1980 in Pacific Palisades, L.A., California, and near the end of his life he wrote, quote, "I sometimes marvel that a third-rate writer like me has been able to palm himself off as a second-rate writer," unquote. Well, I'd like to say here for the record that John Collier was a first-rate writer in a second and possibly a third-rate world. And we're going to bring more of his work to you in coming episodes of Savage Science Radio, because he really is worth your time to hear more of. And that brings us to the close of another episode of Savage Science Radio during this Yuletide season. I'm going to try to find as many creepy and twisted Christmas stories as I possibly can for the month of December 2012. Of course, we are going to have a little bit of a Mayan calendar episode coming up, and I'll give my 2 or 3 cents on that. And we're going to be leaving you with some cool tunes of the season. As a fair in metal and rock, there really aren't that many great Christmas songs. Let's just face it, some of them are like so bad. I was going through my repertoire and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I can't even believe that group did that song. So yeah, I'm sort of sifting through them. Anyway, I'd like to thank Nick Palucco for the beautiful show graphics, Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that really cool intro we use every week to get us going, and Todd Sheets, our executive producer and owner of Jackalope Radio. So, until next week, keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails to you.